Yoga Vashishta, Part 20 by Swami Surya Devananda. Salutations to that reality in which all the elements and all the animate and inanimate beings shine as if they have an independent existence, and in which they exist for a time and into which they emerge. Salutations to that consciousness which is the source of the apparently distinct threefold divisions of knower, knowledge and known, seer, sight and seen, doer, doing and deed. Salutations to that bliss absolute, the ocean of bliss, which is the life of all beings, whose happiness and unfoldment is derived from the shower of spray from that ocean of bliss. Let us review what we covered the last time. The last time we covered the fourth of the seven states or planes of wisdom, Sattvapatti. Sattvapatti is a natural turning away from sense pleasure and dwelling or abiding in truth. Both these happen together and at the same time. In regards to this, we covered four main points. One, do what should be done on its own merit or because it needs to be done. Two, refrain from doing what should not be done because it should not be done. Three, live a simple and natural life. And four, live in accordance with the teachings, engage in appropriate activity, and accept. Today we take up the fifth of the seven states or planes of wisdom of Vashishta. And we will cover four main points in our time together today. Total non-attachment of freedom and conviction in the nature of truth. Both these happen together. The state of non-attachment of freedom is itself Asamshakti. Perception of the world gives way to the feeling of being. And four, though engaged in worldly activities, one is established in an inner vision of non-duality. Just a couple words before we begin, my friends. As earlier, there is bound to be some repetition and overlap, as you can see from some of the main points and what we are going to discuss. This repetition is essential because the Yoga Vashishta is a very tightly woven fabric and everything ties into one another. See, we're not dealing with many different things. We are dealing with a thing that is no different from yourself. So eventually, you're going to come to a tighter group where everything seems to overlap a little bit and there are no clear demarcations. That which you are seeking is not different from your own self. And you can understand by this how things start to blend together and the overlap is sort of necessary. So keep that in mind as we go through and look at Asamshakti. Greetings. Let us start today by looking at the term Asamshakti itself before we go into the four steps that we have outlined, or four things that help towards the attainment or establishment in Asamshakti. Vashishta's seven states or planes is a virtual roadmap for the seeker. It's a roadmap not towards something other, but it's a roadmap towards unraveling the conditioning. And in unraveling the conditioning, we get to reveal our true nature if one practices sincerely. And as I mentioned earlier, there's bound to be some overlap, because when the seeker and the sought start coming together, just like when two lines come together, they get narrower at the apex. And similarly, there's bound to be some redundancy because the seeker and sought are coming very close. So Asamshakti, to begin with, is the practice of holding the principle in the heart and ensuring that the mind and body reflect them in full measure. With full focus on the mind and the way we feel about things, it may seem that this so-called religious element has not been addressed very much, perhaps as much as one is accustomed to. When hearing these talks, it may seem that we are talking a little bit more about the mind, we are talking a little bit more about the way we look at things, the way we live, the way we practice, and the involvement of our thoughts and mind and feelings in this whole process. And we're not addressing so much the so-called religious element, which is, if you want to put it, things talking about God or about scriptures, about things and that. My friends, this needs to be addressed before we move on. What keeps us from God but ourselves? Or even if you don't want to use the term God, what keeps us from our true nature but ourselves? Our true nature is infinite, because our true nature and nature, the truth of nature itself, cannot be different. We are not dissected from that which we see, from that which we think. If we were, we could never see it, we could never think about it, we could never conceive it, we could never perceive it. The seer, or the seeker, and the sought are one and the same thing. There have been sages and saints that have gone before us, and they have laid down their realization in that, in simple terms, that I have attained what I sought. The I and the sought are one and the same itself. So who keeps us away, and what can keep us away from the largeness of our nature except our own conditioning? And it is this conditioning that has to be broken down, this wall that needs to be broken down, and this wall that needs to be addressed as we seek to know our own self. And conditioning. Conditioning is deep-rooted in the heart and mind, and it is this conditioning that keeps us away from God, as we discussed. If this conditioning is not worn down and addressed as a fundamental need, then all else may be in vain. For this to happen, naturally, the start point is to have a sense of purity in the sense of in our feeling of self, because it is with that purity that you're going to find absolute purity. It's with this goodness that we are going to abide in the goodness, infinite goodness, or the true nature of ourself. All else has value only if we tackle this first. It does very little to get steeped in observances and everything else if we are not going to put this as the focus or main effort. Because the bottom line always is, what keeps us from God or from the realization of our true nature? What keeps us? Is it something outside? Then I have no control over it, and it probably can never be attained. Or if it has been attained, then it is something within. Because someone has attained it within himself, and for me to attain it within myself, there are things that must be addressed. And this has been the focus of our talks and our time together on clearing this hurdle. What keeps us from our true nature, and clearing that with a passion? Towards this, Vasishtha has laid out the seven states or planes of wisdom, which is a gradual dismantling of all this inner obstacle that has been laid out that keeps us from our true nature. Now, let us get to the first of the four points that we outlined for today's time together. The first point that we have outlined is total non-attachment or freedom, and the conviction of the nature of the truth, which both happen together as we discussed earlier. Now, it may surprise some to hear that non-attachment is also called freedom, because we have associated this word attachment with things like love, with things like freedom and all of that, for too long without examining it. When there is attachment, when you are attached to something, you see things partially in light of that which you are attached to. You cannot see things clearly to begin with. So there is no freedom when there is no impartiality. Freedom is to see things as they are. When we are partial or biased, we don't see things as they are, and there is no freedom. There cannot be any freedom. So this very term non-attachment, excuse me, which may imply cold and perhaps some even a little bit of insensitive behavior, needs to be looked at. It needs to be examined. We need to get over that hurdle to begin with. And a closer look will show that it is actually quite the opposite. See, my friends, attachment is brought about by duality. It is based on duality and usually favors a status quo of some sort. Attachment cannot exist without duality. There has to be this, that which is attaching, and something to which it is attached. This sense of duality must exist with attachment. Attachment cannot happen without the sense of duality. And so it prefers a status quo. Why do we want to get attached to something? You surely don't want to get attached to something if it is quite opposed to what you believe in, or what you desire, or what you feel good or right about. You may want to get attached to something which is in line with what you seek, in line with how you think or how you feel about things. So attachment prefers a status quo. And this is the other thing to understand. Attachment does not prefer change. And evolution requires change. So attachment even goes against personal evolution. And this is why it results in a lot of problems, even in relationships. Duality gives rise to the urge to unite in some way because it expects a status quo. It expects a sense of fulfillment that's going to come from the way things are right now. And it doesn't want things to change at all, as we have discussed. Now, why all this in the first place? Is it because inherently we are bad or selfish or whatever? There is an underlying unity or oneness beneath all of this. It is in this oneness that duality appears as an appearance. Duality comes as an appearance. This oneness looks at the duality within it and seeks to reconcile it, seeks to overcome it. If there wasn't any oneness, there could never be any feeling of unity by any means. See, my friends, if something is not possible, then there's no point even trying for it. If you know that it's absolutely not possible, no point trying for it. But there has to be the feeling that this is possible. This feeling comes by the underlying sense of unity that's there at the bottom. And then we have an appearance of duality or seeming duality. So this underlying feeling of unity that is deep-rooted within us seeks to overcome this disunity or separateness of things, but it does it in a sort of artificial manner, through relationships, through acquisitions, through all of that, and it still feels at some sort that that total union has not been attained. So it keeps trying. It keeps trying. It goes with the more principle. It goes with the deepening of relationships. It goes through all of that. But it cannot, because the wall that separates is the ignorance that lies within our own consciousness. Until this is addressed, we cannot understand what real unity is. Real unity is not something that can break once it's known, because it happens at a level where breaks just don't happen, in the oneness of consciousness. This feeling of non-attachment is a sort of artificial jugglery that we seek to make this attachment of, fulfill it or overcome it by. Any sincere effort towards realization of oneness, it requires a sort of stepping back from the outer arrangement of things a little bit. When we are caught up or too caught up in the outer arrangement of things, that itself keeps us from pulling back a little bit to look at it in a sort of deeper manner. So this stepping back from the midst of the outer arrangement, one will feel pulled in two directions, pulled by your aspiration and pulled by the outer arrangement. This is the tug of war that the seeker goes through initially that has to be overcome. You'll feel pulled in both directions, and the pull of the outer may feel stronger and more formidable because we are in that ground. And until we get established in the inner ground, there is going to be this tug of war. But with sincerity, which is wholeheartedness, and sustained unwavering practice, while being free or relatively free of outer arrangements, one will gradually be able to experience or abide in this oneness, inner oneness. There is no loss in this inner oneness. Freedom and conviction in the nature of truth are experienced in proportion to the degree of non-attachment and sustained unrelenting practice. These are the important factors. The degree of non-attachment, true non-attachment, not just outer non-attachment, but there must be psychological non-attachment, which is not aversion. And this is why we've been dwelling on this point for a long time. Non-attachment is not aversion. Actually, attachment is aversion, because attachment, as we discussed earlier, does not prefer change. It wants to keep things status quo, and therefore there is a level of intolerance in it. And this is something that is never really seen by the heart and mind, because we mistake all these things. So these happen together, and for success in it, the two factors that are important is the degree of non-attachment and sustained unrelenting practice. Both these have to happen together, and they lead us towards what we have discussed, non-attachment or freedom, and conviction or abiding in the nature of truth, which happen together. This, my friends, brings us to the second of the four points that we have outlined for today. The second is, the state of non-attachment or freedom is itself a samshakti. There is inner peace and joy that is independent of external objects, external conditions, or internal mental states. There is a peace that is, the peace that we experience is always experienced within us. And it is not bound or tied to these factors of external objects, external, whether it be people, external conditions, or even internal mental states like preferences and things like that. As a matter of fact, this is the very layer, the outer of what we prefer and the inner that prefers it. This is the wall of conditioning, and this is what keeps us from our true nature. So therefore, as long as the feeling of other is there, whether it be towards a person, a condition, or a thing in the mind, real peace is not possible, because we are always going to try to bridge that outer, and the outer is always in a process of change or moving in a different way than we are. No matter how you try to change things, things could change on their own. It could go one way or another. So there's always going to be a little bit of restlessness within us. There is us and that we are trying to change, and there is going to be restlessness. This is the duality that needs to be overcome. There is another wonderful scripture, really mighty scripture, called the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. It's one of the 10 major principal Upanishads, also the largest Upanishad among the lot of them. In it, the sage of this Upanishad, there are several sages and masters, but the prominent sage is a wonderful master called Yajnavalkya. And Yajnavalkya at one point is explaining all of this to his wife, Maitreyi. And he has a wonderful declaration that comes towards the end of his conversation with her. He says, Maitreyi, dvitiyam bhayam bhavati, which means as long as there is other, there is fear. Dvitiyam, dviti is duality. Bhayam is fear. Bhavati means to be. So as long as there is another in our heart, this person, this condition, or that thing, there will always be fear, instability, and oscillation in the mind, because we are trying to reconcile ourselves with something that we have already discerned is other, and therefore in the process of change. And inwardly we know that things can always go wrong or always go counter to our preference. And so there is always this fear. As long as this internal arrangement of us and other exists, there is fear. And if fear or even the feeling of uncertainty exists within us, it's an indication that the idea of other is lodged very deep in our heart. This is why we are covering this again and again, because we are going to these essential principles that we sometimes never really cover. We get caught up in the doing of things and the outer. We never address all this. What keeps me away from God, from my own true nature, from the largeness of myself, from true happiness, from all of this? So as long as one lives with their personal interests first, the feeling of otherness strengthens. This is why we've been addressing how to live, to do things because it needs to be done, not because I want it or I prefer it. And we're all trying to get to this I-ness and otherness and get rid of this layer bag and baggage so that we can be rooted in the largeness of our personality. As long as one lives with his personal interest first, the feeling of otherness strengthens. Not only does it continue to exist, but it strengthens. When one lives, on the other hand, a life based on oneness, oneness of the truth of things, the feeling of otherness seems to dissipate and gives way to the feeling of oneness in our heart. So this life based on oneness is also a life based on principles. And this is why, my friends, we've been discussing, do what needs to be done because it needs to be done and let go. Don't brood about the way things are or the shape of things. Rather, concern yourself with what needs to be done because it needs to be done, and to do so wholeheartedly. When you do things wholeheartedly for a protracted period of time, the heart becomes fuller and fuller. The wholeness in the heart increases. The wholeness also heals the heart of all this fracturing and splinting that has happened because of wrong perception of otherness. As the feeling of otherness thins in the mind, the attitudes of likes and dislikes also thin away. All this baggage that we carry is held together by this glue of otherness. I like, I don't like, all of that. It could not be there if the feeling of other was not there. If the feeling of otherness is removed from my heart, then what is there to like and what is there to dislike? There must be otherness. So otherness is a sort of invisible glue. We don't see it, but we feel the like and dislike. Sometimes I know earnest seekers even try to tackle these likes and dislikes, but we never give way to the feeling of otherness. So how do we tackle this feeling of otherness? My friends, this is a very thing that we have been discussing. This is not just psychological or philosophical discussion. Do what needs to be done on its own nature, because it needs to be done. Do everything wholeheartedly. It thins down the entire preference, I, me, what's in it for me. It thins down all of that. That is the thread that threads otherness together in a very invisible way. When we tackle it at that level, we get rid of otherness. So then we learn to do what needs to be done wholeheartedly, with all our heart and being, because it needs to be done. and the feeling of non-attachment in the heart blossoms. There is attachment only when there is otherness. You cannot get attached when otherness is removed. So if we want to remove all these attachments and all these things, or if you want to remove otherness from our heart, we have to tackle and start off with attachment and work on that. Is there a way of living where I can be a normal, kind, compassionate, loving, etc., all of that without attachment? Is attachment necessary for me to be kind, loving, understanding, compassionate, all of those things? And you will realize attachment is what keeps you from being that. We've just never quite examined it, because attachment is attachment to something for some purpose, and attachment does not prefer change. And things and people are in the process of change, in the process of evolution. So attachment disallows evolution or does not prefer evolution, and therefore attachment is selfish. We never really examine all these things, and that's why we are talking about it, not just to look at the philosophical implications of it, but because all of these things form the glue that holds together ignorance that keeps us from the realization of our true nature. You could sit and meditate or try to meditate and do all the practices, japa, kirtan, asanas, pranayama, all of that. But if this idea of dismantling attachment is not taken seriously, of what use is all of that? It's like, you know, trimming the weeds in the garden and then they grow again because we haven't pulled them out lock, stock, and barrel. We haven't done something about making the soil such so that it doesn't weed, probably putting an anti-weed fabric and things of that kind that we may do in gardening. If that isn't done, then weeds are bound to grow again. So we cut all of them off at the surface when we mow the lawn, and then it grows again. What do you have to do to keep weeds from growing permanently or for a long time? It's the same thing that has to be done in the mind, and the same approach that needs to be taken towards this attachment thing. So this feeling of non-attachment blossoms in one and it continues to flourish. But when the feeling of non-attachment blossoms in the heart, one feels a sense of freedom. Freedom from our own limitation. Attachment is a limitation that disallows freedom. It's a freedom of being. A freedom of being is very different from the freedom of doing. Nowadays, especially in today's politically charged times, we talk a lot about freedom, racial freedom, this freedom, that freedom, all kinds of freedom. But that's a freedom of doing. There's a freedom of being that's quite different from all of that doing. And that's real freedom. Freedom of who we feel who we are in our essential nature, not in our physical nature by race, color, and all of those things, but in our true nature. See, my friends, we are aware of the body. We are aware of race, culture, and all of those things. That which is aware inwardly is different from all these things because they are an object of our awareness. And so those are not our true nature. And the world seems to be fighting about those things on the outer. But that which is aware is not that, because that is an object of our awareness, including race, color, all of those things. There is something in you that is aware of all of that, that maybe I am this, I am that, I'm this color or this race or that or that. That which is aware is not the object of awareness or the outer. It is free from all of that. So in letting go of all of the outer, we experience a kind of freedom on the inner, which is tremendous. And then one has a lot of clarity, as in this inner freedom, one can do always what is best, what needs to be done, all the time, without being bound on what is expected of me, or what's in it for me, or me and mine and my people, and that whole baggage. All of that can be let go. When that is let go, there is tremendous freedom. One still does, but one does in light of one's conscience. One does in light of the truth, the best way one knows how, and not because of all this outer pressure. When one stops doing things because of outer pressure ceases. When outer pressure ceases, my friends, there is great joy. We realize we're still living in the world, we're still doing all the things, but we know that we are not bound by it because we live our life based. So all these ties that we have discussed, it keeps one from clear perception or doing what needs to be done because it needs to be done, and therefore wholeheartedly. This is why non-attachment or asamshakti is also called freedom. When we started, we started off with that this is freedom. People think that attachment gives you a sense of freedom. Non-attachment is freedom. This inner freedom or asamshakti, in it, the heart and mind soar high because they are free from the fetters of me and mine. And therefore, one stands together with all things. When you do things on their own merit, the merit of things becomes important. And in that merit, there is no I, there is no me. It's all because it needs to be done. When the whole idea of I, me, mine starts being dismantled, one starts abiding in the largeness of one's personality. See, my friends, just like when you go to a harbor or a port, you often see boats tied to the dock. When they are tied to the dock, they cannot go anywhere. But what happens? Even if they have gas in them and they have an engine, they cannot go anywhere. Why? They're tied to the boat is tied to the dock. But what happens when you let go of that? The boat can go any place it wants. So also when we let go of this I, me, mine and all of that, that is when in the hours of meditation, the heart can plunge into the deeper recesses of one's being, because that tether, that link, that chain, that anchoring has been let go. And this is not something that's let go physically. It's something that has to be let go within our own sense of consciousness or within our own sense of being. There is a feeling of great inner expansion, and this inner expansion cannot be experienced unless there is a letting go. It is a holding on that is also holding on to the feeling of bondage. Letting go of this feeling of bondage is at once abiding in the largeness of the sense of being. Now, my friends, we come to the third point for today's time together or discussion. Perception of the world gives way to the feeling of being. We have discussed this inner expansion. With this inner expansion, the ties that bind have been let go. And the focus, therefore, dwells on this inner expanded state. Just like when the boat is let go, the eyes now turn to the wide ocean in which one traverses. This is a very big shift from the dwelling on the perception of the world comprised of many things and things that are outside. You start seeing everything within. As you rest in that sense of self, it begins to be experienced more and more as real. As you venture into the ocean, the expanse of the ocean is real, and the limitations of a narrow docking place at the harbor has been let go. And so similarly, the more you abide in this, as you rest in the sense of being, it begins to be experienced more and more as real, and the world outside begins to feel more and more like an appearance of sorts. Gradually, the perception of things outside feels even more an appearance, and this recedes completely when all the distinguishing characteristics of those things that make outside and different seem possible seem to fade away. In this feeling of oneness, one experiences peace and duality. All our fears, anxieties are all based on otherness. We think and we worry about this will not happen like that, and this could go wrong with that person, and what if and what not. If you break up all of our problems, all of the worries, all of the tension, or if you want to put it mildly, all of the concerns in life, they are held together by this glue of otherness, which is not real, which has just not been examined. We hold otherness to be a truth only because we have not examined it properly. So when it is examined and let go, now we feel that this letting go may not allow us to live harmoniously in this world outside. But this letting go is a psychological thing. And one can only live, I would say, harmoniously if the other is let go. This doesn't mean that one becomes a doormat. I've covered this earlier. And if we let this otherness go, let anyone do everything. Being wise, doing what needs to be done, avoiding what does not need to be done, does not need otherness. So one can still be wise without otherness. Now, otherness is necessary to put one's interests first, things like selfishness and all of that. There is this difference between wisdom and otherness for selfishness and all of that. This has to be understood and seen clearly. So in this feeling of oneness, oneness comes when the feeling of otherness is let go. It cannot come without that. The feeling of oneness, even in the deep reaches of samadhi, which is a total feeling of or abidance in that oneness, cannot come if we are still going to hold on to all this I, me, mine, what's in it for me, and my people, if we are going to play in that playing field. This feeling of oneness is not going to be experienced. It may be a psychological thing that you think you may have, but it is not going to be experienced in truth. And this is why we have taken some time to talk about it today. Now, my friends, this brings us to the fourth and last point for the day. Though engaged in worldly activities, one is established in the inner vision of non-duality. Now, as we mentioned way earlier, initially it may take a thinning down of outer activity to be able to abide in this oneness. One cannot keep a full stream of outer activity, full force, and try to do this, because the pressure that the outer will exert to maintain its arrangement will be too challenging or too difficult for us to sustain this inner momentum. It just won't be possible for most. And so it's very, very difficult. There has to be a slight disengagement so that there can be inner engagement, and then there can be outer engagement in light of this new inner arrangement or inner engagement. This process is something that each one has to will discover for themselves, but it's important to pay attention to. When one is very sincere and focused, both in one's practice, this practice is not just on the mat, but it's on the mat and in life, or in the mat of life. External activities may need to be thinned out so that all one's energy and awareness flow uninterruptedly. Gradually, the feeling of oneness in the heart strengthens, and then one is able to resume outer activity and things without loss of inner vision. This is the most important thing. To be able to establish inner vision and then to be able to resume activity or amount of activity in light of that inner vision. To do it without that, my friends, very difficult, almost impossible. Then one seems to be engaged in the outer, but one's vision is fully introverted. One's vision is established in that oneness. One acts in light of that oneness. Therefore, one is at peace because the mind is unconditioned and the practice of yoga continues steadily, both in life and on the mat. Let us briefly review what we've discussed today. Today, my friends, we discussed the fifth of the seven states or planes of wisdom, Asamshakti, or natural and total non-attachment or freedom. Towards this, we discussed four things. Total non-attachment or freedom and conviction in the nature of truth happen together. The two, the state of non-attachment or freedom is itself Asamshakti. Three, perception of the world gives way to the feeling of being. And four, though engaged in worldly activities, one is established in the inner vision of non-duality. Next time, we continue with the seven states or planes of wisdom by discussing the sixth state, Padartha Bhavini, or natural cessation of objectivity. Friends, thank you for joining me today. To download this video, its audio, or PDF, kindly visit suryadevananda.org. Thank you.